गतयो मतयश्चैव प्रायश्चितं समर्पणम् पुरुषावयावयर्येते संभारसंभृतामया गतयो मतयश्चैव प्रायश्चितं समर्पणम् पुरुषावायावयर्येते संभारसंभृतामया
Worshipping the demigods. Cha, as also. Eva, certainly. Prayaschittam, compensation. Samarpanam, ultimate offering. Purusha, the personality of Godhead. Avayavaye, from the parts of the body of the personality of Godhead. Ete, these. Sambharaha, the ingredients. Sambhrataha, were arranged. Maya, by me. Sorry, Maya. Translation. Thus, I had to arrange all these necessary ingredients and paraphernalia of sacrifice from the personal bodily parts of the personality of Godhead. By invocation of the demigods' names, the ultimate goal Vishnu was gradually attained, and thus compensation and ultimate offering were complete. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, special stress is given to the person of the Supreme Lord and not to His impersonal Brahma Jyoti as being the source of all supplies. Narayan, the Supreme Lord, is the goal of sacrificial results, and therefore the Vedic hymns are ultimately meant for attaining this goal. Human life is thus made successful by pleasing Narayan and getting entrance into the direct association of Narayan in the spiritual kingdom of Vaikuntha. ओम ज्ञान्ति मिरन्दस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकय चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्त काञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण सो वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम द सेकंड कैंटो एंड दिस पर्टिकुलर सेक्शन ऑफ द श्रीमद् भागवतम इज getting pretty technical and as we progressively go ahead in this section of the Bhagavatam, there is a lot of technical details. So, we will try to focus on some very interesting thoughts that are there in this purport and in this particular translation, and we will see what we can learn from this. So here, it is said that in order to arrange all these ingredients, thus I had to arrange all these ingredients in paraphernalia of sacrifice from the personal bodily parts of the personality of Godhead. By invocation of the demigod names, the ultimate goal, Vishnu, was attained, and thus compensation and ultimate offering were complete. And in the purport, Prabhupada chooses to focus on the importance of Lord Narayan, the holy name of the Lord, as well as the personal presence of the Lord for getting access to the spiritual kingdom. So Prabhupada says here, human life is thus made successful by pleasing Narayan and getting entrance into the direct association of Narayan in the spiritual kingdom. So, the whole idea of the Supreme Lord being there for us in our lives and the one who is present in every aspect of our life, that is what is being emphasized here. That means even for offering sacrifices, even for doing anything in our life, we need the Supreme Lord's powers, His strength, His bodily parts, as is being mentioned over here. So to understand this, let's begin with taking a small story from Vrindavan and look at how the story actually reveals a lot more about how the Lord is encompassing the whole world. One time, in Vrindavan, there was one elderly gopi that used to feed her cows elaichi in English? Cardamom, yeah. So she used to feed her cows a lot of cardamom. So if you put the flavor of cardamom in milk, it has a very special, unique taste, right? So her cows used to give milk which was elychee flavored, cardamom flavored, you know. And slowly the news that, you know, this particular cow gives milk which is cardamom flavored started spreading all over Vrindavan. And obviously, Krishna got to know about this. And Krishna decided to steal that particular milk and drink it. So, Krishna went to that particular house. And while he was drinking the milk, that gopi caught hold of him. And she brought a big stick. And she hit Krishna on his back. The interesting part was, when this gopi hit Krishna on his back, instead of Krishna feeling the pain, everyone in the whole universe felt the pain, including the gopi herself. So she hit Krishna, and she's feeling pain on her back. You know. So that's when she realized, Krishna is living as a Paramatma in everybody's body. And therefore, the word Vishnu means the one who lives in each and every part of the Anu. Vishnu. That means the one who lives in each and every part of the Anu. So here, Krishna is getting a hit over here. Every part of the universe, every person in the universe, every atom in the universe is feeling the pain. That's how the Supreme Lord is all pervading. The word Krishna has a very interesting meaning. And to help us understand the meaning of the word Krishna, I'm going to tell you another story. So, there was a gopi whose name was Chandramati. And Krishna loved to play. He would have different types of pastimes with different people in Vrindavan. So, every individual in Vrindavan, he had a very unique way of connecting with that individual. So, with this particular gopi, he had a very interesting type of rasa. He would force her to play with him. And if she would not play, he would break her pots. So one particular day, so every day this was happening, you know. So she was carrying clay pots. And every day Krishna would insist that she had to play with him. And when she would refuse to play, he would break her pots and run away. So after many, many days of so many pots of hers being broken, every day she was losing two pots. So she decided, I need to put an end to this. So she decided, instead of carrying earthen pots, I am going to carry metal pots. Let us see how he breaks these metal pots. So what she did was, she took two metal pots and she covered them with clay. So externally they look like, you know, earthen pots only, but actually they were made of metal. So she was carrying this metal pot. So she thought she will fool Krishna in this way. So she put the two pots on the bank of the river Yamuna. She wanted to go and fetch water from the river. So she put one pot on the bank and she went with the second pot to fill the pot with water. As she was filling the second pot with water, she heard a big bang. She turned to see Krishna had kicked that metal pot and the pot rolled on the, you know, shores of Yamuna and fell into the water. And she ran to save that pot which was flowing away in the Yamuna river. And Krishna went and kicked the second pot also, you know. So the second pot also went into the river. So now both the pots were gone into the river. And this lady, Chandramati, she understood that Krishna probably is angry with her because she tried to fool him. So she turned to Krishna and asked him, Krishna, are you angry that I fooled you by bringing metal pots instead of earthen pots? That's why you kicked them. Krishna said, no, turn around and see what has happened. And she turned around and saw something shocking. She saw from the river Yamuna, two very divine looking beings were going to the spiritual world. And she was shocked. She didn't understand what just happened. So she turned to Krishna and asked him, what happened? So Krishna said, I liberated the two pots. Both the pots, I kicked them and I liberated them from the bondage of the cycle of birth and death. And they have gone to the spiritual world now. So Chandramati, she was shocked when she heard that. Her calculation went wrong. She thought she would stop him from breaking her pots. But what he broke instead
was a cycle of birth and death only for these two pods. And that's when she realized that it is not possible to fool him. So the word Krishna comes from two letters, Krishi and Naha. The word Krishi refers to Bhumi or earth. So the word Krishi refers to the earth planet or the material world. And Na means the one who gives ananda or pleasure. So Krishna means the one who gives pleasure to the earth. That means the one who gives pleasure to all the residents of the earth. That is the meaning of the word Krishna. And therefore, one way of looking at the word Krishna means the one who gives pleasure to everyone on earth. But there's another way of looking at the word Krishna. The other way of looking at the word Krishna is, there are a lot of bad people on earth. There are a lot of bad elements on earth. So, when there are many bad people on earth, the earth feels a burden. The earth feels pain. And the Krishna means the one who has come to reduce the burden of the earth and give pleasure to the earth. That is the second meaning of the word Krishna. So when we chant the names of Krishna, what is recommended in this purport by Srila Prabhupada, when we chant the holy names of the Lord, when we chant the names of Krishna, we will experience two things. One is, we will experience pleasure. And second is, we will experience a decrease in the burdens that we are carrying in our hearts. So all of us are also carrying a lot of burden in our hearts. And the moment we chant the names of Krishna, that burden will decrease. So, the idea of constantly being connected with Narayan, connected with the Lord, is something that is a part of our culture. The way Vedic culture is organized is that spirituality is a natural part of our being, of our existence. There was one doctor who opened a clinic in a village. Now this doctor, obviously, he thought that I am the only doctor in the whole village and therefore I will earn a lot of money because everyone in the village will come to me only for medicine and for problems. So after he opened the the dispensary in the village, he waited for patients to come. First day no one came. Second day also no one came. 1 month, no one came. Such a big dispensary is opened, and he thought he'll make good money. No one came only. So he went around the village and asking everyone, why is no one coming here? The villagers told him, we don't need a doctor. We don't have any problems only. He said, how is it that the entire village, nobody has any problems only? They said, we follow the 2x2 formula. So he said, what is this 2x2 formula? You know? He said, they said we have a system of following two in everything in life. And they gave a very interesting system. This is what the Vedic system looks like. So they told him, every day, 2 hours we chant the holy names. Daily, we chant 2 hours. And daily, we follow two things. Good diet and good sleep. And they said, weekly we follow two things. Weekly, we visit temple 2 times. So all our mental problems get relieved. We feel peaceful, we feel very calm. Our mind is relaxed. And every paksham, we do 2 things. The word paksham refers to 2 weeks. So that means every 2 weeks, they do these 2 things. What are the 2 things they do? They have a oil bath. Every two weeks, 2 times. Every month, we do 2 things. They said every month two Ekadasis come, we follow that Vrata very carefully, you know. And they said every Ritu, we follow 2 things. The word Ritu, one Ritu refers to 2 months. So every Ritu, we follow these 2 things. 2 times we shave our head and we have a very clean, habit. And then he said every Ayana, we follow 2 things. The word Ayana refers to once in 6 months. So the word ayana refers to 6 months. So every ayana we do 2 things means every 3 months they do this. They consume castor oil You know, it's a way of detox of the body, basically. So they consume cholesterol, it cleans our stomach, and we don't have any diseases. And they said, every year we do two things. Yearly, twice, we go to holy places for pilgrimage. And like this, because we do these two things every, you know, in a sequence, we don't have any problems only. So now, it's such a natural way of dealing with problems, right? Dealing with the body, dealing with the mind, dealing with, you know, the intelligence, dealing with our spirit, everything taken care of simply by following a lifestyle that is recommended according to the scriptures. We just saw something about the number two. Now we will see something about the number three. In the Vedic culture, these numbers also are very interesting. And how these numbers are organized also are very, very interesting. So the number three is a very special number. The reason I'm telling you these numbers is because just by certain number of regulations and just by certain meditation on simply numbers, there is so much of connection with our day-to-day basis as well as our spiritual practices. So in spirituality, the number three is very important. And if you see the way the Vedic culture is, everything is organized in number three only. Like for example, there are three kalas, past, present and future. And then there are three karanas. The word karana means things that make you do things. Like say for example, the mind, the speech and actions. That means thoughts, words and actions. These are the three karanas. Then there are three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. So sattva is a balanced way of living life. Rajas is an overactive way of living life. And tamas is an inactive way of living life. These are the three gunas. Then there are three tattvas. The three tattvas are achetana. The word achetana means there are beings without any intelligence. And then there is chetana. There are entities with intelligence. And then there is a third, the one who controls the both, that is Ishvara. So these are the three tattvas. And then there are three rahasyas. There are three secrets in this world. So these are known as the rahasya trayam. What are the three secrets? The first secret is told by Lord Narayan to Nara in Badrinath. So if you go to Badrinath, Lord Narayan, there's a story of how Lord Narayan gives a mantra which is known as Ashtakshari mantra to Nara. It's an 8-syllable mantra that contains the name of Lord Narayan. And if you chant this Ashtakshari mantra, you get perfection of your life. This is the first rahasya. This is the first rahasya of the three rahasyas. The second rahasya is a mantra that Lord Narayan gave Lakshmi Devi. And this is known as Dvayam. It's a two-sentence mantra. This is the second rahasya. And the third rahasya is what Krishna gave Arjun in the Bhagavad Gita, which is known as the Charma Shloka, which is Sarvadharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. So if somebody knows these three secrets, they know all secrets of this world. And then there is something known as Tri Akshara. Akshara means syllables. So this is known as Akshara Trayam. And which are the three syllables? A, U and Ma, which contain in the word Om. So if someone knows these three syllables, they know everything. So that's the word Om. So the word A in the Om refers to the Paramatma, the Supreme Lord. The word Ma in the Om refers to the Jivatma, all of us. And the letter U in the Om refers to that which connects the Jivatma with the Paramatma, that is the Guru, the spiritual master. So someone who knows these three, the Akshara Trayam, knows everything. And then there is something known as the three forms of the Lord. The deities of the Lord are always in three forms. You will never find a fourth form of any deity in the world. So the first form of the Lord, your first deity form of the Lord is lying down. Ranganath, you know. You'll find many, many deities in the world are in a lying down format. Vishnu is lying in a snake bed. Then there is a second format of the deity which is sitting down. You'll see a Parthasarathi temple, you know, where the Lord is sitting on a throne. So it's a sitting form of the Lord. And then the third form of the Lord is standing. You know, you'll find Gopinath, Balaji and so many of these personalities are standing form. So these are the three forms of the Lord that are in standing form. So just like we have three gunas, sattva, raja, tamas, the Supreme Lord also has three gunas. Of course, the Lord has unlimited gunas, of which three are very important gunas of the Lord. The first guna is known as paratvam. Paratvam means this is the glory of His powers. He is the Supreme Lord. He is transcendental. So that particular aspect, that particular guna of the Lord is known as paratvam, supremacy of the Lord. The second guna of the Lord is known as saulabhatvam. Saulabhatvam means available. He is not just powerful, but He is also available to you. So there are very powerful people that are not available to us, right? So if you want to access a very powerful person, first of all, that person should have time. Most powerful people are not accessible at all, you know. But the Lord is not just powerful, He is not just paratvam, but He is also having the saulabhatvam. So the deity form of the Lord is actually the available form of the Lord. He is available to us in the form of deity. So that is saulabhatvam. That is the second quality of the Lord. And the third quality of the Lord is known as saundaryam, the beauty of the Lord. So these three are the three gunas of the Lord. In addition to this, the three Vedas. Of the three Vedas, the third Veda is considered the most important, which is the Samaveda. In fact, Krishna in the Gita says, Vedaham Samavedosmi. This is among the Vedas, I am the Sama, the third Veda. And the last three that we are talking about is a very interesting three. It says, the material world is one third of creation, and the spiritual world is the remaining. So that means whatever material world is, whatever the size of the material world is, the spiritual world is three times the size of the material world. And therefore, the spiritual world is called as Trikaku Dhamma. Dham means the world or a place. And Trikaku means the one that is three times that of the one that we are living in. So the spiritual world is three times more than the material world. So like this, every aspect of the Lord can be seen in these three numbers. The Bhagavatam has something for everyone. There are some people who like to understand the Bhagavatam or understand anything through stories. Simple, fun, interesting, intriguing stories. So if you are in that category, the Bhagavatam has enough stories to entertain you, enough stories to make you happy. But if you are technically oriented, the Bhagavatam has enough technical stuff also to keep your mind reeling, to keep your intelligence spinning, you know, to keep you extremely stimulated, you know, in your thought process. If someone is philosophically oriented, the Bhagavatam has so much philosophy in it. I mean, there is so much philosophy that your head will spin. That much philosophy is there, you know. So practically, how you want to approach Krishna, Krishna is available to you in that particular way. If you want to approach Krishna in the form of a deity, He is available to you in the form of a deity. If you want to approach Krishna in the form of a philosophical approach, He is available to you in the form of a philosophical approach. If you want to approach Krishna in the form of pastimes, He is available to you in the form of pastimes. If you want to approach Krishna in the form of beauty, Krishna is available to you in a beautiful form. I mean, imagine the creation of the Lord. Every single painter that paints the form of the Lord imagines the form of the Lord in his or her own way. If you see Russian devotees painting Radha Krishna, he appears very Russian, you know. If you look at Indian devotees painting Radha Krishna, they are very Indian, you know. And if you look at maybe Chinese devotee painting Radha Krishna, they appear very Chinese, you know. Whatever way you approach Radha Krishna, they appear to you in that particular way. And therefore the Lord, He has the way to reciprocate with every single individual. And in the way they want them to be, they want to be, to approach the Lord. That's the most amazing form, amazing part of the Lord. So Krishna is very special because, as I said, For everyone, he appears in a particular way. We all have so much dirt in us, right? We all have so much of filth in us. So, how do you clean the filth that we have in us? The dosha that we have, we use, you know, so many soaps and so many, you know, shampoos and so many ingredients we use to clean off the dirt in us. But when we have so much dirt in us, the Lord is inside us also, right? He's there inside us in the form of Paramatma. So, will the dosha that is attached to us, will it attach to the Lord also? The dosha, the dirt that is attached to us, does not get attached to the Lord, because the Lord is called Putatma. The word Putatma means the one who is always pure and the one who is a purifier. He is not only pure, but he can purify also. Like for example, when you eat some Indian sweets or when you eat some food that is made with ghee, right? So if you look at the Indian cuisine, naturally, if you eat with your hands get greasy, isn't it? Anytime you eat Indian cuisine, your hands get greasy. And naturally, when you wash your hand also with water, the grease doesn't go away, does it? It takes soap, it takes cloth, it takes a lot of effort to remove that grease from your hands, isn't it? But the interesting thing is, when we eat that food, the same halwa or the same dal or the same, you know, food that which is greasy, when we eat it, does our tongue also become greasy? Does our stomach also become greasy? Our intestine become greasy? Not at all. You will never find our tongue becoming greasy. Though our fingers can become very, very greasy. So, you know, have you ever put soap on your tongue? You know? Have you ever needed to put soap on your tongue, or have you ever needed to put anything to, you know, clean your tongue with, remove it of the grease? That's how the tongue is designed. That's how our body is designed, isn't it? Similarly, no matter how much dirt is there in our body, the Lord, He'll never become greasy. He'll never become contaminated by the dirt that sticks to us. Because He is Putatma. Just like our tongue doesn't get affected by all the greasiness of the food that we eat, similarly the Lord who's inside us as a Paramatma, He doesn't get affected by all the dirt that stick to us. So all the external dirt and cleansing that we need to do to ourselves, we don't need to do to the Lord. And in fact, the Lord being present within us, He has the ability to remove all the contamination from our life. And therefore the Lord, He is known by different names. And each name talks about His quality of removing contaminations from our lives, of being mercifully glancing at us and helping us deal with our contaminations. So we just spoke about the word Putatma, which is one of the names of the Lord that talks about how He is a purifier. But there's another name of the Lord which is known as Lohitaksha. The word Aksha means eyes. Lohitaksha means the one whose eyes are very mercifully glancing at His devotees. And here is a fantastic story about that. There was a Shivalinga in one place. And the Shivalinga was a very, very ancient Shivalinga. And there was a spider who wanted to build a temple for the Shivalinga. Now, if a human being builds a temple, they will build it with bricks and wall, you know, cement and so many things, right? But if a spider has to build a Shivalinga, what will the spider do? It made a Shivalinga out of web. Cobweb Shivalinga, you know. Now, when you and me see a Shivalinga or any, you know, form of the Lord or any other form of the personality is covered with cobweb, we feel it is contaminating, isn't it? But for the cobweb, it is His way of worshipping, you know, His way of, you know, doing service to Lord Shiva. So this cobweb, you know, this spider built a fantastic cobweb temple for Lord Shiva and went away. The next day an elephant came there. This elephant also was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. He wanted to do some service to Lord Shiva and he saw this cobweb over Lord Shiva. He felt it is dirt, you know. Either out there the spider, you know, make a cobweb around Lord. He brought water from the lake and purified the shivaling with water. And the entire cobweb got destroyed. The spider came again the next day and saw a cobweb missing. So he said, let me again make a temple for Lord Shiva. He built another cobweb, you know, this time much bigger and much stronger. The elephant came again the next day and he fought, saw a cobweb again. Again he purified Lord, the shivaling with water. The third day, this spider went, you know, was hiding over there. Figure out, who's this destroying my temple? And he saw this elephant coming and, you know, pouring water over the shivalinga. And the spider got very upset. And the spider entered into the trunk of this elephant. And the elephant became so mad. You know, the spider roaming around in the trunk. He started banging his trunk everywhere. And he wanted to get rid of that spider. But in the process, he himself died. And the spider also died. So both the spider and the elephant, they became Shivaganas in Kailash. You know, they attained Kailash. And eventually, the spider was born as a person named Malyavan. And he pleased Lord, he pleased Parvati a lot by his tapasya. And Parvati asked him for any boon. She asked for any boon. And Malyavan told her, please give me the boon that I attain moksha, liberation. And she asked, and he asked her, how do I attain liberation? So Parvati told him, the only way to attain liberation, you please Lord Narayan. There is no other way to attain liberation. So this person, Malyavan, he asked her, please tell me, how do I please Lord Narayan? So Parvati told him, in your next life, you will be born in the Pandyan kingdom. And you will be born as a son of a king whose name is Shubhadevan. And his wife, whose name is Kamalavati, you will be born as their son. And at that time, I will make sure you get the feet, you get the lotus feet of the Lord. So accordingly, this Malyavan was, you know, in the womb of Kamalavati in some time. And Kamalavati was pregnant. So while she was in the last phase of her pregnancy, on the day her labor pain began, Lord Shiva appears to her in the form of an astrologer. And Lord Shiva tells this lady that if you can hold on your, you know, without delivering this baby for 48 minutes, one muhurta, if you hold on for one muhurta, this child will be blessed by Lord Narayan himself. Now, if you tell any mother who is about to deliver the baby to hold on for 1 hour, you know, 48 minutes, it's not an easy task, isn't it? But this lady Kamalavati was so inspired that her son will attain the blessings of Lord Narayan. She said, fine, I will hold on. But she said, I can't hold on just like that. She said, you hang me upside down. Only then, you know, otherwise the pressure goes downwards, right? Only then I will be able to hold on the pregnancy. So they hung her upside down for 48 minutes. And then after 48 minutes, she delivered the baby. So when she delivered the baby after 48 minutes, the baby was born with a very special form of his eyes. The eyes of the baby, when the mother saw, she was so amazed. Because the baby's eyes looked very, very divine. And that was because the Lord had glanced at the baby with a lot of love. And because the Lord had glanced at the baby with a lot of love, the eyes of the baby also got filled with that similar love of the Lord. And therefore his eyes became reddish. And this mother, she was so amazed that I gave birth to a baby who has personally been glanced by the Lord. And in that pleasure, in that joy, she actually left her body. And this child, he became a very, very powerful king. And he became such a glorious king that he won so many wars and, you know, took over so many kingdoms. But he had a very interesting habit. Every time he won a war, he would build a temple for Lord Shiva. So like this, he won 70 wars and he built 70 temples. But the interesting thing about his 70 temples that he built, each of these temples had a very special type of architectural construction. These temples were known as Manimadan temples. That means the way the construction was the temple was on a high rise, basically, and there were steps leading to the temple. But the way the steps were constructed was such that there would be a certain number of steps, small steps, then there would be a flat track, and then again there would be a certain number of steps, again a flat track, again a certain number of steps, again a flat track. He built the temple in such a way that an elephant can never enter the temple. That is the style of architecture. Because from his previous life, he had enmity with an elephant, right? So he made sure he built a temple that elephants can never enter. So he was the same spider that became, you know, this king. So like this, he built 70 temples. On the 71st war, when he fought his 71st war, he lost very badly. And at that time, the same astrologer came, you know, Lord Shiva, basically, he came in as an astrologer and told this person, you should go and worship Lord Srinivas, Lord Vishnu. And if you worship Lord Vishnu, then you will get the blessings of Vishnu and you will win the war. And this person, according to Lord Shiva's instructions, went and worshipped Lord Vishnu, Lord Srinivas. And the Lord gave him a sword, gave him a divine sword. And that, with the help of that divine sword, he won all the wars. When he won this 71st war, he built the first temple for Lord Vishnu now. And in the same style, elephants can't come into the temple. Again, Manimadan temple. And then, when he built this particular temple for Lord Vishnu, at that point, he attained liberation. He attained Vaikuntha. He attained the spiritual world. So it is said, just like this little baby was born with the reddish eyes, because the Lord glanced at him. One glance of the Lord and this child started having these reddish eyes. And similarly, whenever the Lord glances at anyone whom he is pleased with, that person also develops love in his heart and his eyes becomes reddish. And therefore that Lord who glances at everyone with love, he is known as Lohitaksha. That is the name of the Lord. So when we chant the name of the Lord constantly, the hope is that the Lord glances at us also with love. And if the Lord glances at us with love, the moment he glances at us with love, that very moment itself, all our anger, all our pain, all our problems, all our frustrations just vanish. And what fills our heart is a lot of love in the heart. And therefore, every name of the Lord and every form of the Lord and every activity of the Lord is simply orchestrated towards one thing. That is, slowly to help us develop love towards Him. So all of us, in our pursuit of studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, the technical part or the non-technical part, the story part or the philosophy part, every single part of the Bhagavatam is oriented towards only one thing. That is to help us develop that eyes that are filled with love towards Him, that eyes that are filled with gratitude in our hearts, and that eyes that somehow or the other are inspired to develop gratitude towards the Lord. The last name or the last thought that we will focus on, which is again another very, very interesting way of looking at the aspect of the Lord's destruction. So here it is talking about how every ingredient is a part of the body of the Lord. So keeping that in mind and trying to understand what is the meaning of how every ingredient is a part of the body of the Lord, there is a very interesting story that I would like to narrate. This is a story of, which is actually one of the very, very famous stories, which is the story of Nachiketa. And this story, I want to focus on one aspect of this story, which I felt is very, very inspiring and relevant for this particular aspect. So there was a boy whose name was Nachiketas, and he was a son of a very, very powerful person who was known as Vajashravas. So this Vajashravas, he was performing a yajna. And while he was performing yajna, he gave a lot of cows in charity. And some of the cows that he gave in charity were very weak cows. They were so weak that they could die any day. That weak they were, basically. So Nachiketa saw the father giving all these cows in charity. Nachiketa went to his father and asked him, when you give charity, you should give charity which is useful to the person you are giving charity to. You are giving cows that are going to die almost. What is the point of giving such type of charity? So this father, Vajashravas, he said, see, whatever I have, I am giving. Now, if I have the old cows, I am giving to the old cows. Whatever I have, I am giving in charity. I am giving good cows also, but I am giving old cows also. Don't disturb me, he said. Nachiketas got very angry at his father's attitude. He said, you will donate me also, like this, one day, you know. Just out of anger, you know, he said that. And his father got even more angry than the son. He said, right now I donate you to Yama. I donate you to the god of death, he said. And the moment the father said that, the next moment Nachiketas was outside Yamaloka. He was sitting on the door of Yamaloka, you know. But interestingly, Yamaloka, the door of Yama's house was locked. Nobody was inside the house. And so Nachiketas asked someone around, you know, where is Yama? The door is locked over here. He said he's gone to rounds of hell. You know, he went to do rounds. Like doctors go to rounds to different wards, you know. There are some hospitals which are like hell only, you know. Doctor going around different wards like that. Same experience. So Yamaraj went for, you know, round Yamaloka, and they said he'll take 3 days to come back. So Nachiketa waits outside the house of Yamaraj for 3 days. And after 3 days, Yamaraj comes. And Yamaraj asks him, who are you? And from when you're waiting here? Nachiketa said, I've been waiting for 3 days here. Yamaraj asked him, 3 days, what did you eat? How did you survive for 3 days without eating anything, without drinking anything? So he said, the first day, I ate all your progeny. Nachiketa told Yamaraj. All your descendants I ate. He said, second day, I ate all your vehicles, all your vahanas. And third day, he said, I ate all your punya. So Yamaraj was shocked. He said, what is this? So Nachiketa said, see, I was hungry. I had to eat something. So basically the point is, this story, the Upanishad is trying to tell us, when a guest comes to your house and you don't feed that guest eats away all your pious activities. All your piety gets eaten away by the guest, you know. So anytime a guest comes, please feed them, otherwise they're going to eat into your pious credits, you know. All your punya is going to disappear. So Yamaraj got scared. He said, no, please don't eat all this. I will give you 3 boons instead. Ask for any 3 boons you want. So the first boon, Nachiketa said, let my father accept me as I was in the past. Yamaraj said, given. And he said, second boon, he said, teach me the Panchagni Vidhi. So Yamaraj taught Nachiketa the Panchagni Vidhi in great details. And Yamaraj was so impressed with this boy's learning ability that from that point onwards, Yamaraj named the Panchagni Vidhi as Nachiketa Vidhi. And the third boon Nachiketa asked, he said, I want to know what is moksha and whom can we attain in moksha. Yamaraj, he explained that Lord Narayan is attained in moksha. And Nachiketa asked him, who is Lord Narayan? And to explain who is Lord Narayan, Yamaraj gave a very interesting example. That's what I want to focus on now, as far as this particular purport is concerned. Yamaraj said, he gave an amazing example. Just imagine you're eating curd rice. So if you're eating curd rice, what do you need along with it to make it tastier? You need pickle, isn't it? Yamaraj said, Lord Narayan is eating curd rice. And essentially, the entire world is like curd rice. And the pickle that Narayan is eating is me, Yamaraj. That's how powerful Narayan is. Imagine eating Yamaraj's pickle. Yamaraj is not such an easy person to eat, right? He is such a powerful person. But for Narayan, Yamaraj is just like pickle. One side dish, basically. Nachiketa was amazed and he was also scared by this definition that Yamaraj gave. He said, does Lord Narayan destroy everyone like this? Does Lord Narayan destroy everything like this? And then Yamaraj explains, don't see it like that. And this is the beauty of this whole discussion, you know. Yamaraj explains to Nachiketa that the Lord's Samhara is actually his Samraksha. Samhara means destruction and Samraksha means protection. Even when the Lord destroys, he is actually protecting us. And then Yamaraj explains, during the time of Pralaya, when the entire universe gets destroyed, everything goes into the body of the Lord, right? Actually, what the Lord is doing is that he converts all the gross things into subtle things and consumes them. So that means all of us, our physical bodies, our, you know, property, everything gets converted into sthula or, sukshma. Converted into something subtle and the Lord consumes it. Why does the Lord consume everything? To protect it. So apparently, when the Lord consumes at the time of Pralaya, all of us are safe within Him. And when the Pralaya gets over, the Lord releases all of us back into this world again. So even when apparently the Lord is destroying, He's actually not destroying, He's actually protecting. So for the devotee especially, we should understand that even the destruction of the Lord is actually taking shelter of the Lord. So that way, whatever the Lord does, whether He does creation, whether He does destruction, or whether He does protection, all are same. Therefore, the word God, G-O-D, means generation, organization, destruction. And all the three things of God is only same thing, which is purely His love for the living entity. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। Thank you.